With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Rich Eisen.
He is one of the all-time
Rich Eisen.
Absolute friggin' greats.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I don't see no competition.
With guest host Ryan Leaf, live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Hey, Rich, huge fan. Love your show. Listen to it every day.
Thanks, brother.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, ESPN NFL reporter Jeff Darlington, NBA analyst Rick Bucher, Oregon State head coach Wayne Tinkle. Coming up, Colts owner Jim Irsay. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Ryan Leaf.
Everybody to the Rich Eisen Show. I am your guest host, Ryan David Leaf, filling in for Rich. To my right, TJ Jefferson, new addition to my guest hosting days, the ones and twos, man.
DJ.
Michael Del Tufo and hey. Brock Shady.
Yo, yo. What's up, Ryan?
Good show. Fun show.
Oh, we're having so much fun right now.
We got a lot of big news, too. What do we got in terms of news of the day over there, Mr. Brockman?
There's so much popping in the NFL. It's, you know, Mike, it never ends.
The NFL ends.
Just nonstop. Just a content machine.
Season never ends.
All right. Yeah. It's content machine. It's the NFL. This is what we do here. There's also a little bit of NBA. But first, come on. I need my proper introduction, Mike. Like, let's hit it.
And now, with a report of the day's news from the world of sports and entertainment, someone who is not a journalist or newsman by any definition of the word whatsoever, it's Chris Brockman.
And then I get disrespected like that. I mean, come on.
American Faroa.
Enough said.
By the way, that horse owes me something. Ever since that, he won the Triple Crown. All right, some NFL news. Let's hit across the league right now. This one kind of surprised me. I don't know what you think about this, Ryan. Patriots giving James White 1 year, $2.5 million, fully guaranteed deal to come back to the team. Deal is official. There were a lot of reports out there, a lot of thoughts that he might go down to Tampa and join Tom Brady, since it doesn't look like they are going to be able to reach a deal with Leonard Fournette to team up there and kind of get the band back together down in Tampa, join Gronk and Brady. But he's going to stick in New England. James White stays in New England. I haven't had a chance to really ask you about what the Patriots have done. Obviously, they've big spenders in free agency. Cam Newton's back. Do you like what they've done? Do you think they're players in the AFC East again, in the AFC? How do you view the Patriots offseason so far?
They're always going to be players in the AFC East. It's what it's going to be under Bill Belichick. He is that good of a coach. A lot of factors came into last year, right? A ton of opt-outs, a ton. COVID to their quarterback when he was probably playing the best during the season.
Absolutely, yeah.
A little surprised that they re-signed him.
Well, bet me too.
I was a little bit surprised there, but clearly they were at a position at the quarterback where they... Now, I mean, they have the capital now available to go try to make other moves at the quarterback position. So I loved... What is hard to fathom, though, is them going out and paying... You know what, $12.5 million per tight end that they got this year in Hunter Henry when they drafted two tight ends a year ago. In the third round. It shows that they've not been very good drafting players. Nikhil Harry at the wide receiver position in the first
trade
round.
Trade rumors for him right now.
Where they hit, where other teams have hit with big time receivers. So, you know, it's a kind of a wait and see thing. Brian Daboll staying put in Buffalo, really damaging for everybody else in the AFC East.
Yeah.
When they kept advancing to the AFC Championship, and the Los Angeles Chargers weren't able to wait and go after him because they were afraid they were going to miss out on all the assistant coaches and all the things they needed to get in place, and Brian Daboll staying put, that was a bad thing for the league because he has made such an important difference in the life of Josh Allen there. And to have him another year, wow. Also, Mitchell Trubisky going there and getting a year to learn under Brian Daboll, that could do a lot for the young man who's maybe just kind of taking a year off, Jameis Winston style, in Buffalo next year.
You mentioned Mitch Trubisky, and I want to ask you about that. What do you think went wrong for him in Chicago, where now he goes from the second overall pick, playoffs, to just completely the wheels falling off, and now he's got to be a backup to kind of wait kind of a year before he maybe gets another opportunity, if he ever gets another opportunity to be an NFL starter?
Well, I mean, this is exactly the same thing that's, you know, when you're drafted in a draft class alongside Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, who went later.
Right.
And who have been so successful, Patrick Mahomes in particular.
Sure.
The expectations game goes way up. Now, don't forget, this is a quarterback who's been to a Pro Bowl, who's gone to two playoffs.
Yeah.
And if it weren't for a kicker that sounded like he wanted to be on Good Morning America more than he did to win a playoff game.
Right.
Doink, doink.
You know, doink, doink. You know, he's advancing into the playoffs again. So, I mean, he looked pretty good for those three games leading up to the Green Bay game this year. And then when they got up against two pretty good defenses in New Orleans and Green Bay, you know, he kind of regressed to what we've seen in the past. So expectations for young quarterbacks are huge. They always have been. It is not as detrimental to the organization when you miss out on one now, where the guaranteed money is astronomical. Like when I busted in San Diego, you know, it put the team down for a good 2 or 3 years. Now, it allowed to go get LaDainian Tomlinson and get Drew Brees, which started the momentum forward. But, you know, you can miss out on a quarterback. And I don't necessarily think they missed on Mitchell Trubisky. I don't think the team's been very good. I think Matt Nagy is, you know, kind of hit and miss in terms. And they also play in a division where there's Aaron Rodgers guys. I mean, you just,
you're going
up against a, you know, Hall of Fame quarterback who got a new head coach and has gone 13-3 in their first 2 years, I think. But George Seifert's the only guy that's been better than LaFleur there
right.
in his first 2 years. So I think it's a good spot for him. I was surprised. I actually thought he might come back to Chicago with the way things were going down, and they're missing on Deshaun Watson, with they're missing on Russell Wilson, and not being able to get a trade done. In that sense, I thought he might re-sign as a free agent. I was glad to see him go someplace else, a place where he can kind of maybe just disappear a little bit. I think Jameis Winston did a great job of that this year. Can prove to his teammates. Now, it's not like he's got a veteran quarterback that's about to step off the map like Drew Brees in New Orleans, but he is an opportunity, hopefully with the preseason, to put some stuff on film and what he can do in Brian Daboll's offense.
Yeah, and it's funny. You mentioned the, you know, the guys in his draft class who'll always be compared to. It also doesn't make that spotlight any, you know, shine any less when the team traded up to get you. So you're also kind of dealing with that.
We have a lot of similarities.
If you're Trubisky.
San Diego traded up to get me at 2, or at least to get one of us at 1 or 2. There are a lot of similarities there between Mitchell and I.
Yeah. What advice would you give Mitch heading into this?
Keep doing what you're
season?
Doing. I think he's handled himself impeccably, you know, with the amount of pressure that comes with it. I think he understands that he gets to play football for a living.
Yep.
He understands there's unrealistic expectations that exist because the institution of football in this country. I think he's handled himself wonderfully. I think the free agent, you know, not getting the option picked up, knowing that he was going to be a free agent at the end of this year, taking a look at everything he needed to take a look at, and going to a place where he thinks he can develop. Now, hey, if you're not a starting quarterback again in the NFL, so be it. It's something I couldn't handle. I couldn't deal with it. And when I was told I was going to be that in Seattle, not only that, but the mental health issues I was dealing with, I just chose to quit. You look at Chase Daniel, you look at Luke McNown, guys who would play Dan Orlovsky, who would play 10, 11, 12 years, and in the business of football, get to play football for a living and make millions and millions of dollars. So if that were to happen to Mitchell Trubisky, you know, boo-hoo, cry me a river, people. All right? He's going to be fine.
Yeah.
He's going to be fine. Hopefully he does get another opportunity.
Yeah,
Marcus Mariota decides to stay put in Las Vegas, thinks he has a better chance maybe of getting a job there. Derek Carr goes down. And Jameis Winston looks like he's going to get a shot to compete for the job with Taysom Hill in New Orleans. So it's very rare, though, when a highly drafted quarterback moves on, not by his own fruition, do we ever really see him again as a starting quarterback in this league.
And you know, Ryan, the difference is you compared yourself to Mitchell, but the fact with you is you were clear cut, like at number 2 or 1A or 1B, however you want to put it, at number 2, no one is questioning Ryan Leaf's name being called right there. But for Trubisky,
yeah,
passing
shock.
Up these other guys, right, like right. That's the difference. Like your spot was secure. Like everyone knew.
Right.
All right, this is the guy right here.
It's not his fault that the Chicago Bears thought more of him than maybe what it was warranted, you know?
That's a good point.
Once a team falls in love with you, like the Cleveland Browns, right? When I was studying Baker Mayfield, there weren't many first round grades on him anywhere. But Dorsey and that crew loved him, mm-hmm. and they thought he was going to be the change. Now, it looked like it's panned out. There's been some hit and miss moments, but he just took his team to the AFC Divisionals without their best wide receiver on the roster because of injury, and did it in impressive fashion. So if a team loves you and they fall in love with you, they'll draft whoever they want to draft, you know? And that was the case right there. Because I worked the combine that year, and I had Deshaun and Patrick and Mitchell all in my group, and I spent plenty of time with them. And all three of them were exceptional leaders in a group of alpha males. They were really, really good. So it didn't surprise me a ton when Chicago, I mean, a lot of people didn't think a quarterback from Texas Tech who did not have a winning record would be a, you know, and don't forget he didn't start.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't start his whole first year. No, Alex Smith was there.
Yeah, he started week 17 because they were resting guys.
Right? And Deshaun Watson, he gets the opportunity and he's made the most of it. He was very good last year, but guess what? They also haven't won. I mean, he's won one playoff game.
Yep.
You know, and so I'm not, I don't like using the bust word for anybody else. You know, and you won't hear it from peers mostly. You'll hear it from media and fans and stuff, that word.
Yeah.
He certainly doesn't fit that bill at all. I don't care if you're drafted first overall and you move on. I mean, would you call Marcus Mariota a bust? Would you call Jameis Winston a bust? Jameis Winston threw 30 touchdowns and 5,000 yards 2 years ago.
Yeah, he did.
So he also threw 30-plus interceptions. 30 plus.
You know? And he actually threw 33 touchdowns, I believe.
30 for 30. All right, one last bit of NFL news before we get to break here and talk to Mr. Irsay. A little Tampa Bay Buccaneers news, Super Bowl champs. They're close to bringing the band all the way back together. They extend tackle Donovan Smith for $30 million guaranteed over the next 2 years, and they reached a one-year deal with Ndamukong Suh for a max deal of $10 million. Still working on Antonio Brown, still working on Leonard Fournette, but the Bucs are close to getting the band back together. Do you like the Bucs' Super Bowl chances in 2021, Ryan Leaf?
By far the easiest bet right now is pick the Bucs to win the Super Bowl again here in L.A. Watch Tom Hardy for number 8 in L.A.
Unbelievable.
Are
you shocked that he did it again? That they did
a little bit. You and I talked about it when I hosted the show when signing first happened. I thought they would be an 8-8 team. Now there was a moment where it looked like they could have been that team.
Oh yeah.
And it clicked. Things started moving in the right direction.
They were 7-5.
And he was as good as anybody down the stretch. The team bought in. Defense got so much better. Todd Boyle's defense was spectacular. The reason why they won that Super Bowl was because of how they could pressure Patrick Mahomes. And so I don't see anybody out there that can vie for it. I could see the Green Bay Packers once again, but clearly they got outplayed in the NFC Championship in their home stadium.
Yeah.
I do not see anything changing. And I also am not surprised at all if Leonard Fournette or Antonio Brown are no longer there. You know, this was a rehabilitating stop for them where they won championships, where they were not necessarily incredible contributors.
Scored touchdowns in the Super Bowl.
Exactly. And, but I don't see either one of them looking at what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady and everybody did for them as like loyalty to come back. I see them both going, we're going to cash in. We're going to cash in on what this is. So,
right.
Hey, when we come back, we're going to go to, Jim Irsay, the Indianapolis Colts owner and CEO, talk about a little 1998 draft and the Hunter S. Thompson letter.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Rich Eisen Show. I'm Ryan Lee, filling in for Rich. We're talking about our kiddos, our giant kiddos.
A 6'9 golfer, though.
No.
That would be like a record.
Well, I tell you what. I cut him the clubs. We'll go out and we'll hit a couple balls, but then he flips them around and turns them into swords, and he wants to play a fight with them.
Of course.
So that's what it's become. We did the whole Disney Plus thing and showed him the movie Raya and the Last Dragon, and so now he wants to be Raya and wants to sword fight. So, you know, that's the new thing with us. So I was on this show a few years ago, and I brought in this letter that I received. I didn't know if it was real. I didn't know if it was true, but I sent it to Rich, and I said, hey, let's take a look at this. This would be really interesting to go about. Here was the segment with Rich when I came on the show talking about this letter.
This is a letter written in March of 1998. Two Colts owner, Jim Irsay, who at the time, a month away in the draft, the decision between you and Peyton Manning.
Right.
It's from Hunter S. Thompson.
Dear James.
Dear James, in response to your addled request for a quick $30 million loan to secure the services of the Manning kid, I have to say no at this time. But the Leaf boy is another matter. He looks strong and Manning doesn't, or at least not strong enough to handle that welcome to the NFL business for 2 years without a world-class offensive line. How are you fixed at left OT for the next few years, James? Think about it. You don't want a China doll back there when that freak sap comes crashing in. Wow. Okay, let me know if you need some money for Leaf. I expect to be very rich when this Depp movie comes out. Your faithful consultant, Hunter, and it's signed HST, with at the bottom scrawled in handwriting, CC John Walsh, ESPN, and CC Colonel Depp. How did you come into possession of this letter?
So I'm a Chicago Cubs fan, and they were in town last week, and I was sitting there behind the dugout, and a guy...
In L.A., here.
Here in L.A., and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Are you Ryan? Are you Ryan Leaf?" I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Man, I'm just, you know, just such a fan of what you're doing now with the foundation and everything like that." And we talked for a little bit, and he's like, have you ever seen the Hunter S. Thompson letter? And I'm like... No, I don't know what you're talking about. Would you like to see it? And I said, well, yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't believe it for a second, right? And there it came in the email, and I showed it to my fiance, who's a huge Hunter S. Thompson fan, and we read it, and I just, the absurdity of the fact that A, Hunter S. Thompson knew who I was, and B, that he was trying to persuade Mr. Irsay to draft me instead was just comical. And not to see it for 20 years. How does it? It's just nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found.
Right.
I called John Walsh of ESPN, and he says, because he's known Hunter and his family's known Hunter S. for years, he said his wife was like, "Why are they thinking it's not real?" And as a matter of fact, it's 1,000% real.
Wow.
And Hunter S. Thompson was a huge NFL fan, and obviously had an opinion on the 1998 draft.
Well, I think now that we know that a lot of people had an opinion on the 1998 NFL draft.
This is amazing.
Isn't that amazing? I love that line, is that you don't want a China doll back there when that freak sap comes crashing in.
The irony of all this, right? The irony of this, he would go on and play, start the most consecutive games of anybody. And I would be injured going into year two and miss the entire season. So we're just reminding people.
Strong, underlined.
Yes, strong. Welcome back. And guess what? This is pretty cool for me. The person that letter was addressed to, Mr. Jim Irsay, CEO and owner of the Indianapolis Colts, joins us now. Mr. Irsay, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, Ryan. I'm doing well, thank you. You make me smile to think about my old friend Hunter. It's been, 2005 since we lost him, and time flies by awfully quick. But it's a joy to be out here talking about Hunter's legacy some, and certainly really thrilled to be on with you. We haven't talked much through the years, and I'm just really excited how great you're doing, and a big fan of your life and where you are at this point. It just shows a lot of courage, and I'm just really excited to be here, because we were all part of history back there in 1998, and it was a very interesting time.
So when you got this letter from Hunter S. Thompson, who is talking to you blatantly about a couple guys that you were invested in, what did you think when you received this letter? And what were you thinking in terms of, were you allowing the guys that you hired, Bill Polian and Jim Moore and everybody, to make the decision? Or was I just that big, flashy, strong guy that wasn't going to get crushed by sap freaks that you wanted as well?
Well, I tell you, with Hunter, we were really good friends, and we had many, many conversations and laughs, and I always tried to kind of catch Hunter when he was kind of on the straight and narrow, which was kind of hard to catch sometimes. But I would, because he's one of the most brilliant men I've ever met, and being a writer myself, Dylan Thomas and Hunter are my two favorite writers ever. And, going back to that time, I tell you, I can unequivocally say it was a very, very close call. A lot of people in the league, I won't say it's 50-50, but it could have been 60-40 one way or the other. It was a very difficult decision. Bill Polian and I talked and had many, many long talks. And in the end, made the decision towards Peyton, but it was really a close call. I had a long, long trusted individual who'd been in the NFL a long time, just hours before the draft, and he said, "I'd take Ryan, over Peyton." But in the end, Bill and I we just kind of felt that we were going to be better off picking Peyton. But again, it was very close, and people forget how close it was back then, because really it was close to flipping a coin close.
Well, you know what? I think he made the right choice, and maybe Colonel Depp had something to say about it too, and who was CC'd there at the end of that letter.
Well, no question. I tell you, I want to just real briefly, read something that Hunter wrote me in May 5th of 1997, right before that letter, and on an original copy of Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, he scrawled out this barrage of words at me, and Cameron Crowe, the great director in Hollywood, and Jerry Maguire, when Cameron read it, he said, "Man, that's some of Hunter's best work." But what I'm going to do now is I have this to read, and this is Hunter May 5th, 1997, scrawling some mad words at me as he scrawled about you coming out in the draft. So here we go on 3, 2, 1.
To Jim Irsay, the Colts suck because you diss the whole concept of team or even gang. The Colts act like a third-world transient in a holding pen with just enough whiskey and weirdness and talent to be competitive, but soon they will start getting busted. Small things at first, but soon bigger and faster and uglier, and your shame will be as the shame of many of your days, which will be spastic episodes full of crooked cops and wrongful dishonor. That is what I see in your future, James. For yesterday, you poor bastards, because you're too dumb to even fake a team concept or even to say the word we in public. That's why you can't have any fun with the Colts, and you won't have any fun with the Browns or the Whores or the Globetrotters. Be careful, James. Your greed-crazed outbursts are beginning to rub off on people.
Oh, wow.
How did you two become friends? And how did you have this relationship where he could just blatantly just come talk to you like that?
A couple of guys, Cameron Crowe, I helped out on Jerry Maguire, and Cameron had known Hunter through the years with the On at Rolling Stone and everything, and then Doug Brinkley, just a well-known great writer in this country, a lot of political biographies and on CNN a lot. Doug was kind of like an understudy for Hunter and kind of helped Hunter keep it together, when Hunter, wasn't that eager to pick up the pen and work very much, and John Walsh used to go up there and I'd talk to John and Hunter would be there, and it'd be all times of the night, with Hunter, he'd wake up at 5:30 in the afternoon and go to sleep at 8 or 8:30, mountain time. So you had to, if you couldn't sleep, you could always call up Hunter for some friendly advice or some fun. His schedule is like none other. But I tell you, it was just so hilarious. Just because he just loved the NFL so much. Honestly, Ryan, he was a big-hearted guy, a grandfather, and I tried to talk to him some about getting sober and those sorts of things, but he just didn't have that interest, and it was heartbreaking when the suicide happened and everything. Anita, his wife, I knew well, and it's just tough. He covered Hemingway's suicide in 59 as a young journalist, and he had it set in his mind that when his body was given out too much, that was going to be that, and I talked to him the day before he committed suicide, and he just was different. He said, I love you, James, and he never talked like that, no. And I said, man, what are you talking about? And the next day, it kind of happened, and it was really, really painful because, when you lose someone to suicide, at first you're kind of pissed off.
Right.
You're like, damn it, Hunter. He was 67 in 2005, so now he'd be 83 years old. But he was something, a one of a kind, no doubt. And we had so many funny conversations, and boy, he loved the NFL and loved football, just an American icon, just really a brilliant man, one of the three or four smartest guys I ever met in my life. The guy was incredible, it was a big loss when we lost him, but it was great, the impact he left with his writing, is just incredible, and miss him to this day, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing some of that. I told the story a little bit earlier. I think it was 3 years ago. I was in Indianapolis speaking at a recovery event, the Healing Place, And a friend of mine reached across to me after the event and said, hey, Mr. Irsay and Ryan Ballard would love for you to come over to the facility and say hi and see him on in the war room on draft night. And I was just taken aback. You know, for the longest time, I looked at, you know, my NFL career is so toxic. And once I left prison and got sober and found this new way of life, the relationships that I built and made, and I just want to tell you personally, that night was, it was incredibly meaningful to me. And it's something I always look back to as a kind of a shining beacon on where I've come from and where I'm going.
Well, I mean, that's so awesome. I mean, like Darius Leonard says in Kick the Stigma PSA that's been going around that we put together, you know, it's all right not to be all right,
right.
You know, and you know, you've helped so many people just coming through what you've come through. You know, your strength, hope, and experience is going to change a lot of people's lives, and you might be able to help that young quarterback coming out of college at 22 and say, hey, think a little bit before you make some of those turns, because you might be, you know, in the wrong part of town if you're not careful. And it's tough. Guys come out 22 years old, they're instant millionaires. People say, why is that tough? That's the luckiest thing in the world. But, you know, if, you know, let an alcoholic win the lottery and you got trouble, you know, it doesn't usually go well. But as you know, you really are a blessing, and you're here for a reason, and God has a purpose for you. And to see you so strong and doing so well, it's just such a testament to what we have to do in this life. Because it's really, you know, to me, it's about the spiritual struggle. Because whether it's alcohol or drugs or depression, or no matter what you go through, as we say, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience, but we're spiritual beings having a human experience.
Yes, sir.
And you know, that's really, to me, the biggest thing is we all are faced with tough spiritual crossroads, and it breaks my heart sometimes to see humans judge humans, because, you know, we have no business judging. You know, I leave that to a power I call God, and you know, my business is to love and forgive, you know, and the rest is in God's hands. And so, you know, it's an awesome thing, you know, to sit here in 2021 in March, and here you are, here I am, you're hosting the show, you know, looking so strong and doing so well. It's incredible. You know, we really do. I know I do. I try to reach out to all our players that have gone through difficult times in any way, shape, or form. And you're always rooting for things to get better. And the work you're doing is tremendous, Ryan. And really, I just so proud to see how awesome you're doing. And we're all locked in that moment in '98 in NFL history, because it really was one of the greatest draft years and moments ever. And you know, God has its reasons why things work out, but we're both here happy and healthy on this day, and that's certainly a testament to amazing grace, brother.
It is. It definitely is. Thank you for all that. I appreciate it so much. Hey, before we get you out of here, when you know, as an owner, does word get back to you? Like the war room, when Bill Polian and Jim Mora and all the scouts are in there and they're talking about, hey, you know, you need to go with this Leaf guy. And then there's another version of like, no, we have to go with the Manning ones. I mean, how much of that gets back to the owner ultimately? And when it was all said and done, did the Manning troop, did they turn around and be like, hey, I told you so. I told you this was the way it was supposed to go.
Well, you know, really, for me, first of all, you know, this is my 50th year in the league, you know, so I started in training camp in Golden, Colorado 50 years ago, Johnny Unitas nudging me in the in the lunchroom saying, "Move your ass, son." And Johnny United sat next to me, and the rest is history, unfurling before me as time went along. So I started picking up jock straps in the locker room for $5 a week, and did every job in the organization, and was general manager at 24. So it's a little different from my perspective. When I hired Bill Polian, him and I were colleagues. I mean, him and I and Steve Gutman and George Young are the ones who developed the draft under Roselle's direction in the late 80s in New York. The cap, I mean, that we see today. And so with Bill and I and those sorts of things, my thing is to be supportive, because I know how hard it is to be a general manager and the pressures that are on you. And really, Peyton, not at all. I mean, Peyton's such a tremendous guy, obviously, going into the Hall of Fame this August. And I can't say enough about him and just his humility and his appreciation. I mean, look at, he knows it's tough to play quarterback in this league, and to be a big time college player, to be, even drafted, much less drafted in the first round, much less drafted in the first two picks. I mean, that's just incredible. And, sometimes circumstances happen where it just doesn't work out that way, and that's just the way it is. But he's always been incredible and humble about it, and because he knows how hard he had to work, to overcome and to be great like he became. So
definitely,
it's awesome. And ironically, also today, Ryan, is the 50-year anniversary that Hunter S. Thompson sat in the Polo Lounge at the Beverly Hills Hotel in Los Angeles, which I know well, and headed off to Vegas for, the famous Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. So it was a long time ago, him and his counterpart are having a pre-drink before they hit the road. Little did he know, that he was going to be, sniffing ether halfway. Like you said, it was around Barstow when the drugs kicked in.
Yeah.
The famous line in the book, and that read is quite a madness read, a journey, but it's really great writing. It more than anything, it's just incredible the way Hunter could turn, checking into a hotel. Hunter turns it into, a Lion Country safari adventure. I mean, he was just such a great writer, and through it all, that's what he's remembered as. Not the craziness and the drugs and alcohol. That all that stuff is just a sideshow. But what a writer he was. I mean, one of the greatest American writers ever. And that's how I'll always treasure and remember him so much.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You're listening to Jim Irsay, owner and CEO of the Indianapolis Colts. Mr. Irsay, thank you for taking the time today to talk about Hunter, to talk about 1998, and just continue to be a beacon for those who still struggle. I appreciate you a ton.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me, Ryan, and good luck with the show. I'll wreak big shoes to fill with Rich gone.
Yeah.
I heard he just made a double bogey in Hawaii. So.
Well, that wouldn't be a surprise. So. Thank you, Jim.
All right. All right. Well, take care, and God bless, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right.
Sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Jim Irsay.
That was incredible.
Was it?
That was incredible.
Yeah, I was too. Wow.
Oh, my gosh. That was amazing.
That was
okay,
great.
Good. All right. Yeah. This was Rich's idea. He called me yesterday out of the blue and asked me, it was how kind of him. He said, hey, would you mind, what do you think about this idea if we had Jim Irsay on to talk about the Hunter S. Thompson letter and, the 1998 draft? And I said, great. So that would be a great segment. So we'll take a break and we'll come back. With your calls, call us at 844-204-RICH. You're listening to The Rich Eisen Show. Filling in for Rich Eisen, Ryan Leith. We'll be right back.
our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wall.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I am Ryan Leaf, filling in for Rich Eisen. TJ Jefferson to my right. Mike Del Tufo on the ones and twos. Chris Brockman, round and third.
Monaco to El
Segundo. Hey, Brockman, do we got any guys, anybody on the phones that want to talk?
Yeah. So we were hitting up the Breakfast Club thing all day. So give us a call if you want to weigh in with your detention group, one athlete, actor, musician, and broadcaster with yourself. But let's go to the phones. This guy wants to talk Eagles. Eric in Oklahoma, line one.
Hey, what's up, Ryan?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, man. Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks for all you do with, like, mental health and, like, mental health with athletes. I think it's amazing. As someone who deals with mental health myself, I just want to say thank you for speaking out about the stuff you struggle with. It's super inspirational. But on to about a quarter of where my mental health stems from, the Eagles. I can't help but feel the Eagles are entering into this dark age, and I don't feel like it's being spoken about enough. We just won a Super Bowl like 3 years ago. I don't know what – nobody's talking about it, but the fact that our best receiver is what? Jalen Reagor, and our best player is a 30-year-old defensive lineman in Fletcher Cox. I don't know what to think about the situation in Philly. I'm just curious as to why it's not being talked about more and how it's just falling apart after 3 years.
Well, I appreciate the call. If you're one of my good friends, Kevin Nandy, he's going through a lot of depression right now with the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, on the highs of winning the Super Bowl. But hey, you did it to yourselves, all right? You had a very capable quarterback right there in Carson Wentz. And for whatever reason, a year ago, Doug Peterson asked him to be somebody he wasn't because the guy took care of the football better than anybody the first few years in the league. He was an MVP candidate the year they would go on and win the Super Bowl. And for whatever reason, they asked him to be more aggressive last year, and he turned it over a bunch. And he got all the blame, and Doug Peterson did not give him any protection. So I was happy to see Doug go. Surprised as hell to see Carson Wentz then be shown the door. And guess what? It's a question I probably should have asked Jim Irsay now that they have Carson Wentz on that staff. But that's the big part of it. You have a franchise quarterback. Now, you got a good one in Jalen Hurts, but the team is in a spiral. And to your point, it is going down the rabbit hole in terms of what that's going to look like. Luckily for them, they play in the NFC East. And you could win that division at 5-11. I'm just saying. All right?
What else? Settle down just a little bit.
Sorry, Jerry. I'm serious, though. I don't care if you got Dak back. You guys were terrible with Dak earlier in the season. You know, let's go to the next call.
All right, line two. Sam in Fort Worth, Texas. Sam, what's up?
Well, let's answer a couple first. I think you'd have to spend the day with Bird from just a trash-talking story standpoint.
Ooh, good one.
Adele, love her or not, she is one fun gal for a day in London would not be bad. And if he's having a good day, is there anyone better than McConaughey?
Oh, nope, probably not.
All right.
Those are pretty good. Those are pretty good
ones.
Hey,
Ryan, question for you.
Yes, sir.
With your experience and playing at a level that a very, very small percentage of people could ever even dream of playing, do you agree with the prognosticators, pundits, in their evaluations at almost any position more often than not, or do you sit back most of the time with the experts and just laugh at what they say? Do you find yourself agreeing with them more often or not?
I tend to take it, you know, I have a different perspective. There are some I agree with. Dan Orlovsky is usually pretty spot on. He's done a heck of a job. But there's a lot of them out there that I know what they're doing. You know, it's a hot take type of thing. I'm not necessarily going to say anything that it's my truth. That's all it is. It's what I see. It's what I believe. If I'm completely wrong, if I'm old takes exposed later down the line, that's fine. You know, I just I take it kind of with a grain of salt and let it play out. So,
what do they most miss, in your opinion, when they're evaluating the quarterback position? What do they often think that they proclaim they know, but they generally have no idea?
The expectation, right? Like this guy sucks. You know, this. You know, if you've played the position, you know how difficult it is. One of the first questions I would ever want to ask somebody like Peyton Manning is like, "How did you do it?" Because I know how damn difficult it is. And so I always am, you know, when I hear people talk about somebody and how quickly to dismiss somebody, you know how good you have to be here and the exceptional that get past that. That's the biggest misconception, I think, when we hear people talk about quarterback play.
Awesome. Love it. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, guys. We're going to get to more calls in just 1 second. My musician.
Yes.
Yep.
So recap your list here first.
All right.
Ryan.
So Kurt Russell as an actor.
Kurt Russell, actor.
Tiger as the athlete.
Okay. Yep.
Tupac as the musician.
Ooh.
All Eyes on Me, man. That album.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. It's my good. College experience. Dear Mama. It is. I mean, that's... I want to know why the East Coast guy comes to the West Coast and all of a sudden just flips it and it turns into this East Coast, West Coast beef.
Dang.
You know, I'm going to ask these questions, these tough questions need to be asked. And the broadcaster for me is Neil Evert. Oregon alum, SportsCenter, LA.
Nice. Yes.
That's my guy. So
good one.
Yeah. That's my guys. What about you guys, musicians? We got a couple minutes here left.
All right, so I'm going to run them out. I think I'm going to go Tom Hanks, actor, musician Garth Brooks, broadcaster Chris Berman.
Ooh.
And I love what Sam in Texas said. Larry Bird.
Nice. Nice, TJ.
Man, this is tough, man, but I'm going to go with actor. I'm going to go with Jack Nicholson.
Oof.
I do have a Jack Nicholson story, not really Peacock acceptable, so we'll
TJ
save that
after
for later.
Dark.
TJ After Dark. Athlete, that's a tough one. Let's put it this way. I'm going to go off the beaten path a little bit. I'm going to go with a guy who has a lot of stories, the Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Oh, okay.
I feel like sitting there with him would be amazing. As far as musician, I was going to go with people that are alive, but since you went Pac, I'm going to go Biggie. Because that's who I would want to have there. And sportscaster, you know, let's shake it up a little bit. I'm going to go Shaq, because I feel like we spoke earlier, but I think Shaq would be fun to hang out with.
Nice. So. You're right.
AKA the Black Rich Eisen.
can't go wrong with that.
So, yeah,
I can't go wrong with that.
Can't go wrong with
that.
Well, dude. This has been, as always, guys, a blast. Kirk Morrison is going to jump in the seat tomorrow.
Okay.
As I have some daddy duty. But I'm going to be back Friday.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
right.
To
close out the week. And I will wear the appropriate shirt, Don Bowie, so I do not. I wore a white hoodie today that was not TV or radio.
You're a pro now, Ryan. You got to know this.
Yeah.
You get it.
Yep. So everybody
job,
out there
bro.
Westwood One, thank you for listening. This has been the Rich Eisen Show. I'm Ryan Leaf. Who's been filling in for Rich today? Everybody on Peacock, stick around. We got some more for you.